From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. What does it take to get a clean air bill through the Utah legislature? We're looking back at this year's session to talk about what politicians did or maybe didn't do to deal with Utah's constantly bad air. This is a conversation with three lawmakers. All of them put forward bills dealing with climate change and air quality. So we'll talk about how that worked out this year, because some of it worked out this year. We'll be right back.
They say all politics is local, and KUER reporters are here to bring you Utah stories, news that affects you here at home, like public lands and water issues, religion, and the tech boom. You can trust KUER to bring you the facts and thoughtful analysis of why the story matters. Listen to KUER on air at 90.1, stream us at KUER.org, and here's a pro tip. If you've got a smart speaker, tell it you want to listen to NPR, and Alexa or Google will take you right there.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There were two resolutions proposed this year at the legislature about climate change. Now, resolutions are non-binding. They're just statements, not law. But they're good indicators of how lawmakers are thinking about different issues. One of those resolutions passed. One didn't. The one that didn't mentioned the science of climate change. It acknowledged the Earth is warming and that humans are playing a role. The one that did pass was only slightly different, but different enough for hesitant conservatives on the Hill to go along with it. That one was sponsored by Representative Becky Edwards, a Republican from Davis County. This was House Concurrent Resolution Number 7. It recognizes, and I'll quote it here, it recognizes the impacts of changing climate on Utahns, and it commits the state to consider the environment and the economy in future policy decisions. The state's chronically dirty air. Last week, Heal Utah invited us to interview three of the lawmakers proposing legislation about clean air this year. Now, we should point out this was a fundraising event and that Heal Utah represents only one perspective on the issue, but they agreed to let us take editorial control of the conversation, and they didn't impose restrictions on the line of questioning. So we agreed to participate. The conversation revealed some interesting insights on the legislative process and the strategy and maneuvering involved to get something passed during a 45-day legislative session. We were joined at the event by Representative Angela Romero. She represents Utah House District 26 and the House Patrice Arendt also joined us. She's the Democratic representative for District 36 in Mill Creek, also co-chair of the bipartisan Clean Air Caucus. And Becky Edwards, also with us, the Republican representative of North Salt Lake. That's House District 20. We began the conversation with a question for Representative Arendt. I think I heard you quoted as saying it's been a good year for clean air.
True?
True. And it's not just about passing legislation. It's also about appropriations. You need to have money to do some of the things that we want to do. For example, research. Every day I get a call from somebody, or almost every day, saying, I've got a great idea on how to clean up the air. But we want to make sure those ideas work and that our Division of Air Quality is getting the analysis they need. So we funded research. We also funded additional staff for our Division of Air Quality because they need to be able to do their job. So that's an important aspect of what we accomplished this year. We also passed some important bills. I'm going to focus on one that I passed that I've been working on for 2 years, and that has to do with diesel emissions. Five counties in this area are required to test for gasoline emissions. You all know you go in for those tests. And in four of those counties, they also test for diesel emissions because we know with a diesel vehicle, it's more likely to go out of compliance. And when it does, it pollutes more. And we've all seen that big black smoke that comes out of the back of certain diesel vehicles. Well, one county wasn't really cooperating, and they didn't want to do that, and they couldn't figure out how to keep all of their pollution in their own county. So we did pass a bill this year that will require them to start a program, a 3-year pilot program, to do that testing, which is really important. And we did that with a lot of cooperation from a lot of people, including Heal Utah, and I want to thank them for all of their help.
Okay, the rest of you, good year? How do you score it? Just broadly, we'll get to the particulars here in a sec.
I think it was a great year. You know, you mentioned the phrase changing climate. And I think we focus a lot on the changing climate, our physical changing climate in the environment. But I think what we saw this year was a changing climate in the political world, a changing political climate, a changing climate of shared understanding of some of the issues. And I think that becomes foundational for moving forward. And I saw a real movement there that I think we can build on in the future.
Why? Why do you think you saw movement?
I think we were able to, on several fronts, several different bills and groups. HEAL was one, Action Utah, group of students, Citizens Climate Lobby. I mean, groups that I worked with closely on the resolution you mentioned. We were able to meet individually with a lot of legislators, and some of this knowledge and understanding just takes time. It just takes mileage, sitting down with someone and spending time with them and hearing, listening to them, where they're coming from on an issue, and having conversations and normalizing their concerns, acknowledging concerns, and answering those. That time was spent this year doing that. And
was that different? Like,
I think it was different.
In what way?
People were willing to put in the time, to take the opportunity and the focus on having conversations and building real relationships rather than just pitching a bill or a resolution. It was kind of a long game approach to the issue, which I think will pay big dividends. We saw it with some of the resolutions and bills that passed, but I think long-term we're going to see some benefits.
Angela Romero, what are you seeing? You seeing change?
I'm seeing change. I agree with both of them. I think the thing that was different about this session was that we had a variety of people from various backgrounds approaching elected officials and having conversations with them. It's easy to show up to a rally. It's easy to chant. But people actually took time out of their day to go up and meet with their elected officials and educate them about climate change, air quality, and what we needed to do. I sit on the Air Quality Policy Advisory Committee, and we looked at all the legislation that was coming through, but particularly when it came to the appropriation piece, and I think Representative Arendt really emphasized that. I ran, Senator Escamilla and I ran an appropriation request for $100,000 in ongoing funding to maintain air monitors on the tracks line, because as we know, the air we breathe, even in Salt Lake City, is not the same. It's dirtier on the west side. My whole background is environmental justice, and so that was funded. But we spent time with atmospheric scientists. We educated our colleagues on preventative measures when it comes to inversions. And we changed the conversation, because it's easy just to say climate change and be in someone's face, but it's another way of framing it, of talking about how do inversions, they're not going to go away, but how are we going to be more proactive to make sure we're protecting people's health, especially vulnerable populations?
Representative Edwards, you mentioned some of the students who were on the Hill this year. Representative Mike Noel told some students from Logan High School who were speaking in support of this resolution, here's his quote, "This whole issue of climate change has been used by organizations to fool people." And along the way, he also mentioned how God is in charge of climate, and that we shouldn't worry about it in that way. Where is he now in the scheme of things in terms of his colleagues up there and that kind of thinking?
He was a yes vote on the resolution. That's where he is. And I think at the end of the day, so those comments were made in the House Natural Resources Committee after a group of students had presented, a group of students from the McGillis School in Salt Lake, West High School and Logan High School, and some university students as well came up. And during the public testimony time, you've all been up there, you know, you have 90 seconds to make your comment, and then they play hardball in natural resources. Your mic is cut off, and that's it. Those students came up, student after student after student, well-prepared, well-thought-out, rehearsed comments, so beautifully written, so heartfelt, and age-appropriate, but really meaningful, on time, on point, And the committee chair was so impressed, and I think that made a big difference in us getting out of the committee and passing that first really critical hurdle. Those comments were made by Representative Noel, but I'll tell you what, when that bill came up for the vote on the House floor, he was a yes. And I think that's sort of an example of unraveling some of the bluster around a comment like that. That sounds it sounds like whatever it sounds like to our ears, and it's a blustery kind of thing. If you separate that out, you blow that away, you get down to what his real concerns are, who he is. He's a grandpa who's a rancher. He cares about the land. He cares about his children. And in other conversations with Representative Noel and 20 other legislators at a Climate Solutions for a Healthy Future panel that the students and CCL and others helped plan the fourth day of the legislative session, there was a panel and then tables set up for legislators to sit at with students from their area and constituents from their area and just talk, just have conversations. And it was at that evening that I saw Representative Noel and many others stay the entire evening when they could easily have skipped out after the panel or at any time stayed and listened and were engaged in those conversations. And as much as we want to have respect and understanding for the viewpoints that seem so obvious on the climate change issue, we really have to be willing to listen to the other viewpoints and try to do the hard work of finding some place we can meet, some place of understanding and of respect for, if not the opinion, for the individual. And that's one thing, in all honesty, the students were amazing at. Sometimes as adults, we become really tied to our beliefs, and it's harder for us to do that. But these students were gems. They were gems at that. And I think it made a difference.
Representative Noel went to Berkeley in the 70s, and that's all I'm going to tell you.
So, but does that mean lawmakers are ready to acknowledge human involvement in a changing climate? Patrice Aaron, what do you think?
Things have changed so much. In 2010, they passed the resolution, as we've heard, calling climate change a hoax. And even when we started the Bipartisan Clean Air Caucus, which I founded and am co-chairing along with Representative Edwards a few years ago, we didn't touch climate change. It wasn't a conversation we had. But now I think things are changing. I'm very optimistic. Everybody's not there yet. The fact that students are involved is amazing, and it's actually inspiring students to get involved in other issues when they see, wow, students were able to pass a resolution after working for a couple of years on it. So I think things are changing. I saw the Tribune poll last year, and I think a vast majority of the population here actually now believes climate change is an issue and that there's human causes that we can change. And if you look at the numbers for younger people, I think 18 to 24, the numbers are like 83%. So I see as our population, as the younger people are coming up, it's going to make a big difference. And as we're electing younger legislators who understand these issues, it's going to make a big difference.
For me, as a legislator, it's less about that question, do people believe that man has an impact on climate change? It's less about that. I'm happy to skip over that because it's such a barrier for many people, and just get straight to solutions. That I think, is one of the reasons why this was effective.
Okay, I think that gets us to what I want to ask you about, how you managed to pull this off, this resolution. I know that you've had, recently you mentioned to us, a conversation with a Texas lawmaker who called and said, how did you do that? I'd like to do it here. What is, I think this is how this person put it, what's the recipe for how you did it? What's the recipe? Like, is it that you fight the battles that you can, you don't stress out about the human part yet, you just do what you, I mean, like, where did you start with that resolution?
So the resolution started actually in 2017 with a group of students who who crafted language, brought it to a senator, and the senator couldn't get the bill assigned to a committee. So they decided to hold their own committee in the Senate building cafeteria. And eventually that moved up to the large committee room on the fourth floor of the Capitol, and it was dozens of students testifying. And I sat there and many legislators came and just participated as audience members listening to these students. It was wonderful and also inspiring. And at that point, I was sitting next to Representative Joel Briscoe from Salt Lake City, and he and I were saying, boy, it's really too bad this isn't going to go anywhere. And we got talking, and we said, well, maybe we can do something. This was like 2 weeks before the session ended. And we figured out, we talked to the senator and said, hey, can we take this off your hands by any chance? And he said, sure. We brought it over, put it in my name, and worked on language and got a... And the very last day that committees could hear resolution, we got it into a committee, and the bill received a 5-5 vote. Well, in the legislature, a tie does not go to the runner. It's a loss. So we lost that year but kept working on it. And the recipe really sort of began at that point. Then what did we do? We brought in stakeholders from not just – you know, community groups like HEAL or CCL or Action, but brought in businesses who also were interested in this broader issue. And also I did a lot of talking with people that I knew hated this issue. And why do you hate it? Tried to understand what the opposition viewpoint was. What are your concerns? What are the stumbling blocks for you to ever get past and even have the conversation? And for many, it really was this idea of it's a belief. And even the phrasing of it, do you believe in climate change? Do you believe that man has an impact? And when phrased like that, it's really hard for people to give up a belief.
So you gave that up?
So we gave it up, yeah. And there was another resolution.
Why isn't that a big deal, though, for you? It's true, isn't it? Don't you think?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And, I mean, I believe that, but... I think beliefs take a long time to change, and you got to ease into it. So for me, I was willing to skip that. Let's go straight to solutions, and that will be the number one thing that I, you know, share with the folks in Texas is don't get so hung up on all of your favorite words that have to be in the resolution. I mean, we were changing things to coordinate with some requests from the governor's office.
Would you explain that? Explain what's going on. You're getting phone calls from the governor's office,
mm-hmm.
saying what? Change this, move this. What were they saying? Can you say? Do you dare?
Do I dare? this is a cone of silence here, right? No. You know, they had concerns about confusing the issue between air quality and climate. Okay, they wanted to have those be seen as two separate things. A lot of, as Representative Aaron said, a lot of good work's happened on clean air. We're down the road pretty far of an understanding and an acknowledgement that air quality matters across the board. And I think climate is still, it's the sort of newest kid on the block. And for that group acceptance, there was concern about that, specifically with one section in there that we actually pulled straight from, had to do with public health and asthma and some of the other concerns, and the pediatrician who was just talking understands all of this, as do we all who have family members who probably, you know, are impacted by this in our own families or neighborhoods. But we pulled this language directly from our Utah State Department of Health, their work that they did, their study on climate in Utah, the health effects of climate, public health effects of climate change in Utah. We pulled it directly from that report, but still for the governor's office, and he's preparing for the energy summit. He's looking, this was in March, he's looking at the energy summit that was just Monday and Tuesday of this week that was coming up. And looking at how that could fit into a broader scope of mission that they were focusing on, specifically on the day one, which was a day of climate action, climate. I can't remember what it was called, but they wanted that in there. And we had a conversation with a lot of the folks we'd been working with and said, this is real, it's true. Are we willing to give this up? Are we willing to take out those three lines in order to get strong support from the governor's office, strong commitment that they're 100% with us? We decided it was. And in fact, then at the summit on Monday and Tuesday of this week, there were several references, and it was lauded by the governor's office and by many as, look at what happened and look how we can now build on this foundational acknowledgement as a state.
Let me hear from Angela Romero and Patrice Arendt on that question of whether it's worth, how far would you two go to compromise? This was a win, but she had to concede certain points. She had to concede some language. How are you thinking about that now as Democrats and the way you have to negotiate these kinds of things? Patrice Arendt, you've been there a long time. How do you think about that?
And it depends on the issue. It really does. In this case, I think the appropriate thing was done. We got the resolution passed. I had another resolution this year I was working on with folks from rural Utah talking about renewables and developing more jobs in rural Utah with wind, geothermal, solar. And that resolution was hijacked by Representative Noel in a committee. And he added a lot of language about public lands and things that I just couldn't live with. It became such a bad resolution that I determined I was going to be focusing on other air quality bills instead. This was just a resolution. And be working on it maybe at another time, which I will be as Representative Noel retires. And so you do have to make a determination what is worth fighting for, what has become so bad. Are you going to get that very bad language that I couldn't live with as a sponsor out on the floor, or are we not going to be able to get it out? So I think we always have to look at those issues, and it's always about compromise. It really is. And my bills are actually improved as a result of the process. You learn things going through that process that you may not have seen the first time because different eyes are seeing things in the bills that you didn't see. And so that's good, and I like that.
I know some people wanted to clap when they heard Representative Noel's not coming back, but I want to warn you, he is a much better option than what's coming in his place, Phil Lyman. So I just want to remember, it's easier to see who you know than what you don't know. And I'm just telling you, Mikey has some flaws, but there's also a lot of good there, too. So I don't want to villainize him completely because he's helped me in other areas like sexual violence. And so we all have many faces. In the environment, we're not on the same page, but I don't want to paint him with one brush because he has many sides to him. In regards to what Representative Arendt and Representative Edwards pointed out is a lot of what we do is compromise. And if you can't compromise, you're not effective. So if you want to be loud and make a point, go ahead and do it. But are you really going to be serving your constituents? Some of your constituents will say, yeah, I have somebody saying climate change and doing things. Or are you going to really create change? And that's how I always approach legislation and why I've been effective in Senator Escamilla and I in getting this funding. Like I'm telling you, $100,000 in ongoing funding to monitor the air and talk about environmental justice and the inequality that's happening within our city. I mean, we haven't even gotten into sound and lighting. And so these are the issues that we want to bring forth because it's not just about climate change. It's about the day-to-day issues that impact the people that I represent because I represent we're in my district now, but I represent the east and west side of the city. And I'm concerned about the air we breathe. And the reason why I even got involved in environmental justice issues, because I was always an advocate for communities of color, was because I serve on the board of the National Hispanic Caucus of State Legislators, and we were going to pass a resolution about net metering and how it hurts communities of color. And I'm like, whoa, what do you mean? And so that kind of tied everything together for me. And so when I look at what we do at the Capitol, we can't do anything as Democrats without our Republican colleagues. So it is our job, unfortunately, to educate them and bring them along. And I want everyone here to remember that you can't write everyone off just because of their stance on, or a statement on one issue. And I think there are a lot of more people that are more willing to work with us. And unfortunately, we use the word air quality versus climate change, but they're there when we're talking about air quality. They're there when we're talking about inversions and how to prevent the effects of inversions, because we're not going to get rid of them, but what can we do to make sure that we're protecting people, especially people in my district who every day walk out and, like I said, the air they're breathing is not the same as some people who live up in Mill Creek. No offense to Representative Arendt.
Doug, let me add one thing. Let me add one thing about that. Some legislators see this through the lens of economic development. When we first started our Clean Air Caucus, and it's bipartisan and it has legislators from Logan to St. George, some of them didn't have issues in terms of air quality where their districts are located, but they saw how it was affecting our economy. We know it's one of the top issues that people look at. We know it affects whether people are willing to relocate to Utah, and some people leave Utah. Businesses may not come as a result of that. So it really has made a difference to have people look at it, legislators look at it through a different lens, and how it's affecting our economy is the way a lot of them will look at it.
That's Patrice Arendt. She's the Democratic representative of House District 36. We were also joined by Angela Romero, the Democratic representative of Utah House District 26. And Becky Edwards was also with us. She's the Republican representative of House District 20. They joined us at an event hosted last week by the advocacy group Heal Utah. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West from KUER.
KUER teams up with local and national businesses around the state to support the station and bring you Utah stories and national news from NPR. If you've got a business, like a restaurant or a car repair shop, or maybe you take wedding photos or offer legal services, whatever it is, when you join KUER as a business sponsor, you're helping people who care deeply about facts and storytelling stay connected to their community, all while building your company's brand. Learn more about becoming a sponsor at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're looking back at this year's legislative session to talk about what politicians did or didn't do to deal with Utah's constantly bad air. It's a conversation we had with three lawmakers who represent three very different political persuasions and constituents: Democrats Patrice Arendt and Angela Romero, and Republican Representative Becky Edwards.
I want to come back to that idea of how you clean up the air through market solutions. I know, Representative Edwards, you've written about that. So I do want to ask, though, Representative Romero, you sponsored a bill that targeted those who – this is so strange to me. They tamper with those emissions controls on their diesels so that they can have this big cloud of black smoke that comes out. It's called – what is it? Rolling coal, right?
Yes.
Didn't get to the Senate floor before lawmakers ran out of time. So it didn't pass this year. You think it will?
I was surprised by the support I received. And, you know, again, going back to Representative Noel, he's kind of the theme here. He was the chair of rules. And I asked him, what's interesting, Representative Arendt and I had similar bills, and he sent hers to natural resources, and he sent mine to transportation. And hers should have been in transportation too, her emissions bill. And I just went around and I educated my colleagues, but I took a different approach. I didn't want to, Hill was really the individuals that brought the bill to me. But I'm like, let's just kind of do this quietly. I don't need advocates or people helping us with this. And so Jessica and I would talk to elected officials one-on-one. And that was effective for my bill. It passed committee with only one negative vote, and it's because he was a little confused and he was new to the legislature. And it passed the House floor and nobody questioned it, because I talked to my colleagues and they're like, yeah, we hate those cars too. But it wasn't just about rolling coal, it was about emission standards. So say somebody gets cited and they're not rolling coal, they would have to go and get that checked. And so we're working with the county health department. So in a sense, it's your approach. My strategy with that piece of legislation was just to do it behind the scenes, and it was effective, and I plan on running it again, and I don't see many people opposing it.
This is interesting, this idea of do it quietly, the approach. Is that what it's about?
Depends on the piece of legislation.
It does. And what do you mean?
Well, it depends on the message you're trying to put out there. I felt like...
Because it sounds like you're saying, like, I'm not going to rock the boat too much and I'll get more done if I'm...
No, I rock the boat all the time.
Okay.
That's my problem sometimes. Yeah.
It's knowing when to...
It's knowing what strategy you want. And did I want to make a statement or did I want to pass policy? And sometimes you can make a statement and pass policy, and sometimes you just want to pass policy. So the approach I used with this bill was just about educating my colleagues about my concerns and how it impacts all our health, and also talking about the inequality again, because for me, everything ties back to that environmental justice kind of lens and all the intersectionalities and how it impacts us in a variety of ways. And what we were trying to do is, if people can't fix their cars, we're giving them an option to get their cars fixed through the programs we have, and to tell the idiots out there who are, you know, blowing black smoke on us, it's not cool. And we had highway patrol officers who bike that have had the black smoke thrown out at them too, so they understood that. So it's really about how you want to message it. And with this particular bill, I wanted to just do it one-on-one with the help of Hill Utah behind the scenes, and it was effective. And if that wasn't working, maybe I would have made a lot of noise. I don't know. It just depends on the bill.
I want to hear the rest of you on this idea of the approach. Go ahead.
So this bill was actually a multi-year approach, and it's already, so you'll know, illegal to have this rolling coal. But what Representative Romero was doing was improving the penalties and a process to make sure that the health departments knew about this. So it's the next step. When I did this bill originally to make this illegal, there was a lot more noise and a lot more demonstrating to people what this was doing, and everybody had seen it. So I think it depends on what you're doing, when you're doing it, and who you're working with. Sometimes you need to find a partner who's coming from a very different perspective. My Senate floor sponsor on the bill I did this year having to do with diesel emissions was a Utah County Republican with a diesel truck. And so sometimes it's who you're bringing in to help you with your approach and how you're looking at it.
I'll also say that, you know, we had a couple of years ago over a dozen clean air bills pass, more than that. It was, what year was that, Patrice?
Well, we've had, I mean, for many years, we've had so many bills. When our Clean Air Caucus started, we were looking at dozens of bills and probably passed a dozen. And of course, every year there are fewer bills to pass because we've been able to get a lot of these things done. Yeah. In fact, since the Clean Air Caucus started, we've passed more clean air legislation than we have in the history of our state. That being said, there's a lot more to do.
There is, but the events that preceded that kind of seminal year of cleaner legislation came on the heels of two different years of massive clean air rallies at the Capitol, and maybe some of you were there. Front steps of the Capitol all the way back until last year was the largest series of rallies I had ever seen at the Capitol, all the way back to 350 North, all the way, you know, east to west of the big grounds in front of the Capitol. That gets people's attention. That did, because every single legislator had someone from their district who was at that rally. And it was a rally for, you know, some pieces of legislation were mentioned, but the point was it showed scope of influence. It showed that people, a whole bunch of people, cared. That was foundational for then coming back the next couple of years and building on that and saying, remember how there were 5,000-10,000 people at the Capitol that day? Some of those people were your constituents, and they care about this, and here's something you can take home to those people. It's a yes vote on this bill. It's a yes vote on this bill, and it became, building on that, was incredibly important. And then there were bills that kind of slide through quietly. But I think it takes all parts. It takes all parts of this, and people find their individual niches. Some people are really good at creating noise. You know, the rallies, the big stuff that is, you know, shaking it up. And other people are quiet behind the scenes people. And some are relationship builders and some are, you know, data scientists, data crunchers. You find your skill level and you find alliances that sometimes are opposite of you that you can really create some good synergy with and build bridges. And I think that's where the good work happens. But it takes it takes a whole variety of ingredients to have success.
So it matters when a group of people march up to the Capitol Hill. I think there's some sense that legislators, some of them are just going to feel defensive or petulant about it, that they don't really pay that much attention, but you're saying that makes a difference.
I think it makes a difference. I think it made a difference with those clean air rallies. They were huge. They were impactful. And I remember very distinctly one of those years talking to the Speaker of the House at that time and saying, we really want you to come speak at this rally. And this individual was saying, well, it's really not my issue. I don't know. I haven't been that friendly to this issue. I'm like, now's the time. Now's the time. You're going to have 5,000 people on the front lawn of the Capitol. Come. Own this. Take ownership of this issue. Take a
piece. Get them an audience, and they'll come.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And he did. And he did. And it became like a shift of perspective and a shift of focus for him, and it was helpful. It's been helpful ever since.
There's also an issue having to do with inversions. This session, we had a bad inversion in December, but we didn't see any really horrible inversions during the session. I'm going to be honest. I didn't hear from as many constituents. You weren't contacting us. People weren't contacting their legislators. I've always said, I don't want any inversions. None of us want pollution. But if it's going to happen, could it happen the last couple of weeks of the session? Because then people see it, and it was almost out of sight, out of mind, making it harder to get these appropriations and pass bills. But having people involved, having Envision Utah doing a study saying the number one reason people leave Utah, and it's not even close to number two, is air quality. It's on everybody's radar screen. Everybody's talking about it, and particularly the companies that a lot of these legislators listen to, those high-tech companies, that's a big issue for them, other companies that are considering coming to Utah. And we actually have stories of companies coming in during an inversion saying, oh, no, I don't want to bring my employees here. We have people up at the university saying to me, we always try and time our interviews so they're not here during certain times of the year.
Yeah. Representative Romero, I wanted to ask you, one of the things you've talked about is that this isn't just about air. And I'm guessing you're thinking about it in a more kind of holistic way. You've talked about the importance of connecting this issue to housing and healthcare. I think this is the way you put it. We need a systemic institutional approach. Would you talk about that?
Again, it goes back to the environmental justice aspect for me. We're all privileged because we can be here having this conversation. There are many people that live in my district that rely on mass transit, that don't have health care, that can barely pay their light bill. And so I see this from a systemic perspective. And if we truly want to address truly address the environmental justice or make an impact there, we have to look at all of those issues and how they all tie in together, and why it's important to build a robust mass transit, why it's important to have affordable housing and a living wage and access to health care. Because for me, it's not just about the air we breathe, it's how that air impacts others. Because when you live by a freeway, you're a lot of times always in the red zone. So I think about the children in my district who are going out for recess, and what kind of air are they breathing, or the health complications that many people in my district have. And so I look at this from that holistic perspective, not just about my electric vehicle, which I support, but how do we ensure that everybody is receiving the same privileges? And that's sometimes something we overlook, because we have to check ourselves at the door and look at our own privileges and how we contribute to that as well.
What were you most disappointed by?
This session?
Yeah.
On this area...
I just hold it to air quality. Maybe you were disappointed about a lot of stuff, but...
I've been disappointed that we haven't been able to do the school bus transition faster and more completely across the state. That's been disappointing. That's a money issue, and that will eventually happen. This was an issue last year, but it has to do with kind of the broader picture, like Angela's talking about, and some of the area sources in home buildings. I've been disappointed about the building code issues that didn't get a lot of traction, and I think in some ways moved us backwards on that. And I just, I think there's still plenty left on the plate, to do. So even as things get left on the plate, I feel optimistic because this is my last session. I won't be here in 2019 to see, you know, the next great air quality bill pass or on climate or whatever. But I feel optimistic because long after we come and go and the next group of legislators come and go, it's really the citizens of the state of Utah that hold the power, hold the influence, and really keep me feeling optimistic about the future.
What about the argument that lawmakers made it more expensive to actually own an electric vehicle this year? They're using less gas. They're still on the roads. Is that a disappointment?
That was a huge disappointment to me because when you're looking at incentives, and we're always providing, we being the legislature, incentives for various things, the idea that you're going to penalize someone that's driving a hybrid or an electric vehicle is wrong. Instead, we should have been providing incentives for those, and also for solar.
But how did you explain it? How did that happen? Why? I mean, I think I get the economic sort of technical argument that technically they're not buying as much gas and they're still using the roads, but I don't understand how the thinking worked on that. Do you?
That was the thinking, and I, you know, I would have a lot of arguments against that, including, you know, heavier vehicles are doing more in terms of road damage. There are lighter vehicles that are getting better mileage than certain hybrids. I mean, I thought the arguments were ridiculous myself, but that's what happened. And I was very disappointed with that. I thought it sent the wrong message. I would have preferred to see, you know, I don't want to provide an incentive for people to drive cleaner vehicles. I was also disappointed that a bill that unfortunately just didn't get drafted till late in the session that will make these zero emissions vehicles more available in Utah didn't pass, because a lot of people want to buy these vehicles and they're not available, or they cost more than if you bought them in another state. So I think we need to be part of a compact that brings those vehicles into Utah, and I think that's really important, because it's one thing to say everybody wants to drive them, but if you can't get them, that's a big issue. I'm also concerned about the building codes and what we're doing, because people don't think about buildings as being polluting. But when you look at what's polluting, yes, number one, 48% vehicles, but the next are our sources like buildings. And we need to think about that. And when you build something, it's going to be there for a very long time. A vehicle may turn over in 12 years. A building will not. So I think we really seriously need to be looking at building codes.
When it came to SB 136, I voted for it. Okay, I get people here that were concerned with the fees on electric vehicles. I had those same concerns. I thought that, yeah, I didn't like it. But at the end of the day, I was more concerned about mass transit. I was more concerned about the restructuring of UTA. I was more concerned about people that live on the western end of my district who can't afford a Prius or an electric vehicle, waiting for a bus if they miss it, waiting another half hour and being late to work. And so it's not a black and white issue. It's very gray and it's very complicated. My frustration, I think, with my colleagues is still insisting that coal is going to make a profit. I was just sitting in committee the other day. The whole committee was dedicated to coal and about clean coal. And as we were looking at the graphs, it's showing that people aren't buying coal anymore. And they're talking about shipping coal to, you know, the inland port and how that's going to work and the ruling in California. And I'm thinking, well, wait, you still have to transport this stuff. And how is it going to impact our communities here in the United States of America? So my frustration is their insistence on still focusing on coal and dismissing renewables.
I wanted to ask Representative Edwards, your resolution urges the state to coordinate the use of its tremendous free market resources to deal with the effects of climate change. And you mentioned things like, you know, there are hotter summers now and there's lower snowpack. What does that mean exactly? Because I'm trying to get at this question of market solutions and how it is that you translate this idea into practice in that resolution. It's a non-binding resolution. It's a statement. So how do you translate that into a piece of legislation or some regulation or an idea?
Well, I think we have a great opportunity. We have two great opportunities before us right now in the state. One is what happens in the Northwest Quadrant. How do we do that in a responsible way environmentally? How do we create a whole system that will be viable long term. So transit, any housing that's out there, the businesses, how do we support that, and whether those are levers that the legislature can pull in terms of incentives or that kind of thing. Those are big discussions that need to happen now. If we don't do it responsibly, we will be pushing up against our being in further noncompliance with our state implementation plan. That's very worrisome. Patrice mentioned the economic piece. That's a real economic depressor if we don't do it right. So that's one area, the Northwest Quadrant. Another area is the whole prison redevelopment. How that whole site, and in a committee yesterday, Economic Development and Workforce Services Committee, we heard the presentation on what the plan is, and there's of course a commission that's looking into all of this development and how the businesses and mixed use and homes are going to be out there, but it impacts transit, it impacts schools, it impacts so many areas that I think for the first time we're at a place where we can actually, as a state, use our resources to incentivize, to nudge. Of course, we don't like mandates in Utah, but we can nudge and encourage using the power that we have as a state to build both of these sites out in a responsible way. We know our state population is going to double by 2050. Where do those people live? How do they live? How will that impact all of us? What does that do to our air? What does that do to our climate? And unless we have those conversations now and prepare for the Northwest Quadrant and the prison site, what they're going to look like when they're fully built out in 10, 20, 30 years, we're really missing out on an opportunity. And so that is a whole series of conversations that will take a long time between lawmakers, between business, between stakeholders to try and come up with market-based solutions. There was someone at the Governor's Energy Summit on Tuesday who spoke about a new building. I hate to say who it was because I could possibly get it wrong, but it's in the southern part of the Salt Lake Valley, and it's all completely, they've got solar, they've got renewable energy driving the whole building, they're recycling all their water. I mean, they're doing all the right things, but they're doing this all on their own. We need to continue to use levers that the state has, like the high cost infrastructure tax incentive that we used that has helped tremendously with some of the efforts in coal country, as well as helping Tier 3 gas come on a little faster. Those are just two examples where I think we have opportunity for real movement.
In an article in the Salt Lake Tribune, Robert Gerke said about the air quality legislation passed so far, he said that we are nearing the point at which the low-hanging fruit has been plucked when it comes to improving air quality. He said it's going to take big initiatives and a major statewide investment to bend what he called the pollution curve. Do lawmakers have it in them to do that, do you think? Patrice Aaron, big initiatives. Like, we've gotten the low-hanging fruit. Now we need to start moving on to bigger stuff. Not sure even if you agree with that, but do lawmakers have the minute to make the next step?
Well, and there's not one silver bullet that's going to solve this problem. Many people, and even today, came to me and said, well, we'll get Tier 3 fuel, and it will all be solved. And Tier 3 fuel is important. So you'll know there's no federal requirement that any refinery in Utah make that conversion, because they're allowed to do averaging and banking. So if a company owns multiple refineries, they may just decide to upgrade another refinery, not in Utah. So we provided incentives. That's one of the things that we need to do. We've provided serious incentives, and we've seen already a couple of our refineries that are going to do that, and I think you'll see more. That's a major initiative, and yes, there are other bills that need to pass. But I think if the public will is there, if people are complaining like they do about education, you will see changes. It's going to take significant funding to go into mass transit and to make walkable communities and bike lanes. I can't tell you how many people from my area say, I want to be able to ride my bike there. I want to be able to walk there. But how do I do it safely? And so I think that some major transportation initiatives are very important.
Angela Romero, do you think the public will is there?
I think the public will is there. but we also need to walk the walk. And I think even myself, I drove here today by myself. I could have carpooled with Representative Ollins. But I think we also need to be accountable for our own actions, too. When you look at the air, a lot of it's on us driving our cars. But again, that goes back to mass transit, and that goes back to walkable communities, and it's the setting the infrastructure. And it's unfortunate sometimes the state of Utah will try to prevent municipalities from being progressive and moving forward when we don't like, not us, but what many of our colleagues don't like something that a municipality is doing. They kind of try to create a law so they can't do it. So we have a long way to go, but we as individuals have that too. But I also want to remind people, us here that are here right now, we have a lot of privileges, and how do we utilize those privileges to help more vulnerable populations that can't be here with us today and rely on public transit and are working two or three jobs and don't have health insurance?
I also think there's an education component too. I see how effective, in terms of water conservation, you have with Slow the Flow. I see that if you started to throw garbage out of your car, what would your kids say? It's just not socially acceptable. We need to make it so it's not socially acceptable to idle, so it's not socially acceptable to do so many of the other things that we do that are polluting the air, and that people think about that these issues, because one person can make a difference, and people haven't really come to that with air quality the way they have in other areas. When we talk about when you're replacing your water heater, getting an ultra-low NOx water heater, when you're buying a vehicle, or the state is doing something with their fleets, and we've actually made huge improvements there with our state fleets and government fleets, to get a vehicle with a very high smog rating. Those are things that can make a difference, and people need to understand that. And I think the education component is really important for legislators and for the public.
That's Representative Patrice Arendt. We were also joined by Representatives Angela Romero and Becky Edwards. They were with us at an event hosted last week by the environmental advocacy group Heal Utah. Our thanks to Scott Williams, Grace Olskamp, Michael Shea, Hannah Whitney, Noah Materko, and Jessica Reimer at Heal Utah. The program was directed by Lewis Downey, produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.